So our next speaker, and help me to pronounce it correctly, Aishi Klitsch. Is that correct?
Yeah, it used to be Irmak, and I changed my last name to Klitsch.
Oh, Klitsch. She is Associate Professor of Civil Engineering in the School of Natural Resources at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. She is a member of Landsat Science Team of USGA NASA and specialized in water resources. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I guess I don't have to just announce. Good morning. I'm going to talk two different applications that we're running on Google Earth Engine Cloud. And Rick mentioned a little bit about the eFlux, our effort, and I'll go a little bit in details and talk also the residential water use app that we developed for the homeowners. Let me just extend to what Dr. Allen said about the eFlux. Again, eFlux is an earth engine, flux is an evapotranspiration modeling tool at the Landsat resolution, 30 meter resolution, and running on the Google Cloud Computing. I would like to acknowledge my team members, co-PIs. This is a really fruitful effort among the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, University of Idaho, and Desert Research Institute. Again, here is a link, and the link is working. I usually do a live demo, but since this is kind of a combination of two presentations, I'll skip the demo part. All right. So why did we choose the Google Earth Engine platform? Well, those who are familiar with the ET mapping, you know, we're processing ET on a Landsat resolution. That's about 160 by 160 kilometers. And what's the resolution of what's the spatial resolution for per pixel for Landsat? 30 meter, right? So how many Landsat pixels do we have within that 160 by 160 kilometer? About 30 million pixels. So when we produce these ET maps, we have to do these computations for 30 million pixels. And that takes, and this is complete surface energy balance algorithm. So it takes a lot of resources in terms of computational power and storage. These images are huge. And that's why the Google Earth Engine really allows us to do these computational more efficiently. Can you guys hear me on the back? Okay. And you know, the Google provides free access. I just want to mention eFlux is available globally and freely for the entire globe. And ET information, you know, we recognize that that's a global need. So, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, everyone on the planet Earth has access to this data layer. And, you know, if we remember, one of the Google's mission is really to organize this world's data and make data universally accessible. And the Earth Engine platform, the infrastructure, allows us to do that, process this big satellite images and run the simulation models. Dr. Allen mentioned about some of these. Again, it's a metric model, it's adaptation. It uses thermal imagery from the Landsat satellite to calculate individual surface energy balance parameter and eventually the final ET, the water consumption at the 30 meter scale. The differences between the metric and eFlux is, you know, metric, you gotta operate it manually. eFlux is, you gotta do the computations manually. eFlux is completely automated. And I mean, we try to provide the maps also, again, for entire globe, for entire Landsat archive. I'll talk a little bit about the automated calibration. Here's a Landsat image again. You've seen this. It's Southeast California and Salton Sea. And here's the Palo Verde, I guess the mouse, yeah. Palo Verde Irrigation District. And one difference again from the metric model is we do a gridded calibration of sensible heat flux. Those who are familiar with the energy balance, you know, we do the metric is a single VT function, single calibration for entire Landsat pixel. And because of this computation, Google's supercomputing power, we were able to chop these images in pieces and create a, create a gridded VT function for the entire image. Again, it's been useful for those, you know, statewide, national, and international application. And this gridded sensible heat calibration is being useful because there are a lot of places that there are different air masses, and applying a single VT function doesn't work well when you, and so each efflux overcomes that. Here's the final ET. Again, this is ETRF. Just like crop coefficient, it's the fraction of reference ET. On the left, what you see is the Palo Verde Irrigation District. That's one of our sites that we regularly run both metric and efflux. And these are, again, showing the animations of the monthly ET images. As you can see here, the smaller figures are showing the snapshot close-up. There are a couple of takeaway information from this. One, you know, ET changes in time, so you know we need more Landsat because it's not consistent over time and over space. We can also see that some of those fields, you know, there's hardly any ever TV, any ET, because these are fallow fields, and you know, California, just like the rest of Western U.S., the water from agriculture is being transferred to the cities, you know, and this is San Diego, Los Angeles. They pay farmers not to irrigate, retire their land so that they can buy their water rights and transfer water to the city. So that's, we use a metric and efflux regularly monitor these fields. Rick mentioned about the data sources. Again, this is a great opportunity thanks to Google. They ingested a lot of collection. We have Landsat collections. We have the several types of weather data depending on where we are. We have the soils, the land use. Again, if you go outside U.S., we're using the land use from European Space Agency. DEM, SRTM, again, and the gridded weather data is very critical because we use that for time integration, you know, because every time when we have a satellite overpass, we have a single image and we have to integrate in between so we can get monthly and growing season and annual ET. So the reference ET is being calculated for the time integration. Also, we use the NLDAS, the hourly or 2 hour time period weather data to calibrate the efflux model. Just that wanted to bring it to your attention. It's running globally and we've been tested over 84 countries in the world. Here's the interface. You'll see more in details later. This is an application that I made close to São Paulo, Brazil, about 3 weeks ago. We were there for the Inovagri conference, and we gave a one-day, the first training workshop for the efflux to over 50 Brazilians. And this is an application that I made. Again, the area is Ilha Solteira, that the one that you see. Again, these are just some of those intermediate parameters. Seems like the post color didn't show up well. Again, albedo, we provide individual all the intermediate parameters, and you can download them as a TIFF file here, these arrows. Let me see if I can find the mouse. So if you first you gotta run it, And once you run it, you can download these TIFF files. And this is a September 1st. We were doing near real-time application. Again, you can run EFLUX for entire Lancet archive and for near real-time. Again, the main difference is it uses readily available. It relies on graded weather data, you know, rather than using the measured weather data from the weather station. So again, albedo, you know, you see that this is the legend. Again, apologize for the poor legend, but this is a beta version. Low albedo around the reservoir water bodies, again, showing the presence of vegetation in the VI. So a number of parameters that feeds into an energy balance. Again, some close-up. There are a lot of sugarcane fields, cornfields, wheat fields. Are like, there were like 40 different types of crops there that we looked at it during the workshop, and we can, you know, see it. It's the video of that 30 meter resolution. You can see the definition of the fields, you know, especially when you go outside US, these field sites get so smaller, and Landsat, that 30 meter allows us to see that. We can see that the impact of human behavior on these ET maps. All right, surface temperature, again, as Dr. Allen mentioned, this is the host that we drive, the satellites. They can't see the vapor, but they can see the temperature and the shortwave radiation. So we use that, you know, we take what we know and then we solve for the water consumption, ET, in the energy balance equation. Again, just some close-up, and here's the relativity. Those who are working in water resources and water consumption, this is just a typical PC, crop coefficient curve. And 0 to 1, when you look at the legend, again, I should mention that you can run single image at a time. It takes about 10 seconds. This will take, you know, you have to spend like a day to process this. Right now, we have another 6 months left in our contract. We're in the process of doing 1 year. So we kind of stopped putting our efforts on this interface because our final objective is a user can produce annual ET for a Landsat scene or for a water district, for a state. So that's our ultimate goal, and that's what we've been working on. Just running, let's say you have 24 images per year, running all 24, mapping basically this EFLUX over the collection and getting it and providing an annual ET. Again, just some close up, and here's the actual ET. And we're pretty close, and there are a few versions. There's a version that allows user manually calibrate if you want to, and the one that you're seeing here, eflux-level1appspot.com, that version, there's a stretch function that, you know, if you go out and sample, let's say, some of those golf fields, you know, egg fields, bare soil, and if you realize you're maybe a little over or underestimating, you can easily do this stretching. It's a linear stretch, 10-20% adjustment. Again, if you know what you're doing, we allow that in this version. And again, just finishing up with the São Paulo State District in Brazil. So that's pretty much about ET. We're about to run EFLUX for California using CMS graded weather data. So that's another addition. The user will allow to bring their own weather data so that there's, you know, less uncertainty or bias with your actual ET. Again, it's pretty close. I think on average, you know, 80-90%, we're pretty good with the estimation of water consumption. All right, so let me stop there. for Epilox and give a little bit about what we're doing for the homeowners. I ended up buying a house in Lincoln, Nebraska after I moved, you know, Gainesville. Dr. Jones is here. I would like to acknowledge he was my master and PhD advisor. My training is more in crop modeling, but when I moved to Nebraska, it's all about water. You know, they do irrigate and they need good estimates of water, and similarly too, those residential water. So I bought this house and it's a huge yard, and I started getting this huge bill, like 500, 600. It was, you know, too much for me. I said, oh gosh. And I was just irrigating the way that the person that I purchased the house, it was, you know, I didn't know how to set up my irrigation controller. So anyway, so this is how it originated. I wanted to develop a tool that was, you know, what I was envisioning, tool to help the homeowners manage the water application for their lawn. Again, it's mean this app is running for entire counties. Here's the beta version. Again, I'm presuming Google is gonna do a press release and make it public in 6 months or 1 year to make all of these products, you know, announce these once we do the final release. The calibration of name is the core part of this application, and there is a YouTube video for the interest of the time. I'm not going to go into there, but if you want to explore more, we have a white paper that we haven't published it yet, but you can see what we did in the YouTube. All right, so you know, just as I assume all of you here, you know, you have house, lawns, and you have this irrigation controller here somewhere sitting in your garage, and you know, depending on the lawn and the water consumption, the weather, because of the weather, you gotta adjust, you know, weekly or a few times a week. And this can be intimidating. It could be a little challenging for an average homeowner, and we wanted to go out and help even an 80-year, 90-year-old, you know, a grandma, so that she can easily, just with one button, she can have an idea, you know, whether she needs to adjust this irrigation controller back in her garage. So it's simple. It's not as complicated as the Epilox. We first estimate the NDVI, and once we have the NDVI, we estimate the landscape crop coefficient. Just as crop coefficient, we just call it landscape coefficient. Again, this coefficient is different. It's just a given idea. This is based on the metric tool. We sampled a bunch of golf courses, different types of trees, different types of, and we have, depending on type of vegetation, we have different equation. And finally, we estimate the water consumption for the lawn using KL, landscape coefficient, and reference CT. You know, the reference CT is near maximum ET for given weather condition. All right, so the NDVI, we had heard presentation importance, the row, you know, the importance of the reflectance, use of reflectance rather than digital number. Again, we're using NAEP image, but there were a lot of dilemma, and Google purchased that. I mean, they didn't pay much from USDA, FSA, entire NAEP images is being ingested on Google Earth Engine. And so every 3 years, in some state 5 years, we have NAEP images available. And these NAEP images, you know, it has the tree bands plus near infrared, but they are only digital numbers. They're not radiance, they're not reflectance. And, you know, so the NDVI you get is not consistent. It's not really reliable over time or over a geolocation. So that was a main problem, but we gotta see those sideways. We gotta see the tree shadow, the lawn, the flower bed, you know. So we needed that 1 meter resolution. So, you know, again, just approaching as engineering way. So we started with NAEP. Again, thanks to USDA and Google, they ingested all these on the Earth Engine. Again, those NAEP, National Agricultural Imagery Program. That 1 meter allows us allowed us to see the, you know, the property, the parcel that homeowner, and all the distribution of the land. And the BDS, especially not the earlier years, but you know, the last, I'll say 5-10 years, NIP imagery has both RGB and near infrared band, so we can calculate NDVI. You know, earlier we have only 3 bands. Again, I wish that FSA, USGS were more consistent when those companies flew over the cities and collected these NIP images. They do not report any calibration, just a bunch of digital number that each band even is being stretched. You know, just some pretty picture. So, you know, there's really not much to do science. So, anyway, what we did is to calculate the NDVI, we first calibrated the NAEP digital numbers to reflectance, and we did that by using the lens set, that 30 meter lens set. You know, we can see the sidewalks, the lawns, the trees, but we can use the lens set to calibrate the NAEP, and that's what we did. And so here's kind of showing the extent, spatial extent, NAEP about 6 to 10 mile, lens set 160, about 100 mile, 106 kilometer. So that's, and that's kind of because of the, you know, we're working on a smaller scale here on the NAEP scale, about 10 kilometer. Again, here's a one lens set pixel, 30 meter, and within that one lens set pixel, you can see that, you know, we have 900 NAEP pixels. These are 1 meter mesh of pixels. And again, this calibration, you know, taking this digital number NAEP with the lens set, that allows us to produce a consistent NDVI over time and among the years. Again, here's just showing the landscape coefficient before the calibration and after the calibration. Again, that's the link for the app. These are some of the steps. This is a very tedious, complex. We have, like, I think ran about 17 different indices just to mask some homogeneous agricultural pixels, some parks and golf courses, both in NAEP and Landsat, to texture analysis, to do this calibration. So here are just the details kind of showing what we did. Again, the video has the, you know, the nice demo. All right, so this is NAEP in about 10 kilometers for the beautiful city of Lincoln. It's called the, so, and this is the NDVI that's calculated from the NAEP, again, after calibration, and this is the water consumption, you know, the actuality, that's the video of this satellite, we can see the actuality. Alright, this is just a kind of showing the emphasis, you know, how we mask around the texture analysis, we really look at those homogeneous 30 meter pixels so that we do a good job with the calibration. Again, at the end, we don't work with the those raw digital numbers, we convert them to radiance and reflectance, then we calculate NDVI. Again, we do this, just we look, take the NAEP images and search for the Landsat archive, find the closest Landsat image, and then we do this analysis for the calibration. Okay, so that's for the NAEP, and there are a number of other collections, data collection we do. Stasco is one of them. We do daily water balance. Again, we're going to tell the homeowners how much water their lawn has been using and what's going to be for next week. And so we use a soils database and simple SCS, NRCS curve number method for the runoff. Again, this is available for entire U.S. And weather, that's a strong component of the gear up. We do simulations 2 weeks at a time for past, because now, you know, what was the situation for last week, because we're gonna, let's say I'm the homeowner, I'm gonna run this app. So we run it a week before using this RTMA, the meta scale reanalysis weather data. That's the best collection out there for the predicted weather data. And for the next week, you know, that's a 2 week simulation, we use NDFT National Digital Weather Forecast. Go get the NOAA's weather forecast for the next 6-7 days. So we know what the weather look like and what the water consumption for our lung. So that's strong. Hopefully we would like to implement these capabilities, being able to forecast water consumption for the purpose of irrigation scheduling for the efflux. So we need to kind of merge these two components. So that's kind of summary here. Again, the water consumption is here. It's just a simple, you know, the NDVI based landscape coefficient. But again, you know, we want to keep our grass green, right? Do not over irrigate so we can conserve water and, you know, keep it green rather than letting it die or brown. So that's the whole idea. So I think it's having a single NAEP image and trying to have a single landscape coefficient works pretty well for the residential lawn application. All right, so that was done one at a time. You know, if you knew, look at the NAEP images, these companies flew over, collect these images over cities over the summer, usually. So that means we gotta, you know, we calibrate for that landscape. But right now we're in October. I'm gonna irrigate, let's say you're in Florida or somewhere in California, you're gonna irrigate your lawn and you wanna know how much you need to adjust your irrigation controller. Well, the lawn conditions are different. You know, it's not green because NAEP is taken in summer, it's usually green when that NDVI is peaked. So we bring that NDVI, NAEP NDVI up to current condition. Today is, say, October 27th or 24th. We go get today's or close to, you know, like within 2 weeks period further and backwards. Again, we do another adjustment. We bring that NAEP to the current condition if you are doing scheduling, you know, other times, other, you know, rather than only summertime. So that's been really successful. And you can see that, the differences. Here, when you look at the NAEP image, you know, I don't know the date for this particular NAEP image, but, you know, there's like the current condition is pretty green compared to that. Means that, you know, it's pretty green. Those grass is thirsty for water. You're going to put out more water. And so you can see from higher NDVI for the current condition. That's why we do this NAEP adjustment twice, just so you know. I know it's overcomplicated, but it works pretty well. Okay, here's an application. Again, this is a beta version, similar to efflux. On the left, we have the pretty much all the intermediate key parameters that drives the tool, the model. This is my house in Lincoln, Nebraska. You start with a Google Earth image, and Google, you know, that is, you have the digital image, you have to pay for it, it's centimeters resolution. So unfortunately, we cannot use that. That's the dilemma. I mean, you know, you see this perfect image, but that's not what we use to run this app. We have to use NAEP, because that's the one that is freely available. And it is available for entire US. So here's the Google app, and users, this is easy. And easy to draw a polygon around your parcel, around your, and it doesn't matter, you can, you know, just really looks at the green area. And we're in the process of bringing, if you know your boundary, and because of the, you know, privacy, those parcels are available, but we cannot use it. So if you're a homeowner, you can bring your own, you know, parcel information, your house property, and run this. So, and this is done only one time. You don't have to do it for entire summer. Just one time, and it's been done. So this is the NAEP image. Again, it's not as pretty, but you can see that there's a quite bit of, I mean, here's the grass. I'm trying to find the mouse here. Anyway, you can see the trees, the shadows. That's my house, the sidewalk. All right, so here's the classification. We gotta run a classification. We gotta identify those grasses. We wanna make sure that when we do apply irrigation, you know, we remove those site weights, and you know, we do area calculation volume. So we do a classification. It works really well. I was really impressed because in California we do this. Use Metropolitan Water District uses this because they paid a bunch of homeowners to get rid of the grass and put gravels or some artificial pit. We monitor those houses, and we didn't know those were artificial pits. You know, the artificial grass. It can identify artificial very beautifully. So anyway, so we, you know, man-made, what is grass, what is shallow, what is tree, because again, depending on what we have different landscape coefficient algorithm. And this is the NAEP NDVI, and I think I have another one, just for the, for as of today, you can see the shadows here, the darker green over here, I'm having, these are the shadows, and we identify those shadows. Again, whether it's grass under the tree, we have slightly different equation. All right, so in here, so this landscape coefficient, again, that's once in a year based on the NAEP image. That's landscape coefficient, and we do use that to estimate the water consumption. Okay, so here are some of the available tools for the homeowners. One, since we're working with the weather, and we provide past week's weather in the next week, the forecast. So the yellow is the today. And again, this simulation, I used that for that São Paulo when I was back in Brazil. This is today. This is the maximum minimum temperature because we run full reference ET, ASCE, Penemonte equation. So the temperature, you know, for the 2 week period. Again, another useful information is the precipitation. You know, you gotta know how much precipitation you're gonna get, you know, if you wanna adjust that controller. So we have the rainfall and see that for that earlier October. So there was some rainfall estimation, and here the line is consumption. And we're gonna share this link with a number of potential users, find out what is best to deliver. You know, these are just pretty much, you know, the mechanism is there, but these are some of those products that we were envisioning to deliver. Okay, here's the irrigation information. Since there was a prediction of the rainfall, the gear up says you gotta turn off your system, the irrigation. Go out, get to, you know, to your garage and turn off that system. It's gonna rain next week. And again, this is because there is not much rain, you know, there's no irrigation going on, so we don't have really the information, but there's a scheduling information here. Depending on how much water your system is putting out, if you have put 5-inch, 1-inch, 2-inch, you know, system, tells you how long you gotta run that controller, you know, how many minutes. So we, you know, do this area calculation, depth of water, and finally give the homeowners the how many minutes they need to run their system. All right, so that's pretty much summarizing these two models that we put out on Google Earth Engine. And again, we're doing a lot of offsite to help some of those potential stakeholders. And Google, if user is interested in Google, you know, if you have, let's say, drone or some high-res images willing to pay, they're going to charge some one-time service fee, and this will be available at, you know, let's say, even less than a foot resolution. It's getting there, but that's where we are right now. Thank you. I can take any questions.
I appreciate your analysis of the arduous, and I've, lots of us have been involved in making that more efficient. And for sure, it's if homeowners knew how much water they wasted, they'd never complain about agriculture. So
yeah.
It uses it very efficiently.
Yeah.
But when I do the math, and let's just take my house as an example, I have a 0.7 acre yard. I could cut my water use in half for my home, and it would still be less than a 1 or 2% increase in efficiency in producing the food that I eat. There's so much water used in our food that even though we focus on home water use a lot, I think that's the overall national water use savings is small for home water use compared to agriculture. And I don't know how much other people
well,
do this analysis.
You know,
I think it helps because it gets people thinking about water.
I know there's a substantial amount of residential water use in California, for instance. Yeah, I can't tell those exact numbers, but I think, you know, that's something. This is really to conserve, you know, energy and water, you know. I appreciate that agriculture, irrigated agriculture, but I think if every individual do their homework, you know, be a good citizen, you know, and I think it all helps. We all, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe Dr. Allen might know those numbers. You know, are there a comparison for global application? There's no question the agriculture water use. You know, it's a lot.
Depends on how big your house is, I guess.
Well, you can't eat your grass.
Yeah.
So that's
a good.
If you just look at aerial extent of cities versus ag, irrigated ag, it's sizable.
Yeah.
And any expansion of cities is probably going to take the water from ag, so it's one reason to
try to control. When you say sizable, I'm thinking 5%. You know, if you look at a map of the cities versus all the ag, it's an interesting analysis, and I haven't done a rigorous analysis of it, but I run the math in my head. There's a massive amount of water used to grow our food.
California is probably more like.
Yeah, I think at least 15 to 20% of the residential water. That's why our focus is kind of, you know, targeting the metropolitan water districts is using for the purpose of monitoring those homeowners. And, but I think we can save, you know, some water.
Yeah, if it's 15%, that doesn't grow any food, that's a lot of water.
Yeah. Okay, excellent point.
One thing for sure, water was a lot more expensive for homeowners.
Yeah, that is a lot.
Even if they didn't know how to adjust their sprinkler system, they hired somebody else to do it.
Well, hopefully they can just run the gear up, like I said, you know, okay. You know, this will be eventually linked to the, it is running on the iPhone, smartphone, but I don't know, this, you know, if something happens, the, you know, we don't want to take any responsibilities, and so it will be available, like, you know, linked to the controller eventually.
Thank you. Yeah. Sorry.